Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, it's back to politics as we focus on Wisconsin's new voter ID law and the part it is playing in the ongoing recall election effort against Governor Walker. The new law, which mandates that a photo ID be presented at the polls before you can vote, is being challenged in lawsuits at the federal level by the American Civil Liberties Union and at the state level by the League of Women Voters. Both lawsuits allege that the photo ID law is unconstitutional by putting up obstacles to voting that particularly impact the elderly, the poor, students, and racial minorities. The Republican sponsors of the law say it is necessary to combat voter fraud and to ensure that only legally cast votes are counted. This issue has been publicized in recent days by news coverage of Ruthel Frank. She's an 84-year-old Village of Brokaw trustee who can't get a free voter ID because she doesn't have a birth certificate. She has now signed on as a plaintiff in the ACLU lawsuit, which names Governor Scott Walker as a defendant. All this comes in the midst of the recall effort against Governor Walker, on a day when recall advocates say they have gathered over 500,000 signatures, very close to the number needed to force an election. Well, we've got two guests with very different perspectives on the voter ID law and the Walker recall, both of them small businessmen from central Wisconsin. Kevin Hermaning is a Wausau-based financial advisor and the owner of Hermaning Financial. He's the former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, a former member of the Mosinee School Board, and a former Republican candidate for Congress and for the state Senate. He supports the governor and the voter ID law. Daryl Mayfield is the owner of Bradley Mesh Group. That's a Mosinee-based consulting firm. He is also a teacher at Upper Iowa University. And his professional background is spread across the public administration, business development, nonprofit administration, and private entrepreneur fields. He identifies himself as a political independent. He opposes the voter ID law and favors recalling the governor. Now, we want to hear from you. Do you believe the voter ID law is necessary to prevent fraud, or do you believe it's an unconstitutional effort to keep people from voting? How do you feel about the recall effort against the governor on a day when it's been announced that over 500,000 signatures have been collected? Do you believe those signatures are legitimate? And if it comes down to it, would you vote to recall Scott Walker, or would you stand with him? If so, why? Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Daryl Mayfield, Kevin Hermaning, thanks for being back with us today. You're both repeat guests on Route 51. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here, Brian.
What's your reaction to the news of the day, which is that over 500,000 signatures have been collected on those petitions? Kevin, we'll go with you first.
Well, I don't think it should be any surprise to anybody that the advocates of the recall elections were going to be successful in generating the number of petitions necessary to force the recall of Governor Scott Walker. Of course, there will be many more signatures turned in than are actually required. That will be done, of course, to offset any challenges that are made. And, of course, there will be multiple challenges and the attempt to strike some of those signatures, as well as, when you think about it, probably even some court challenges and delays through the legal process to put this out into perhaps as late as May.
You think May might be when we have the election. Is that your best guess right now?
Well, personally, I'd like to see it occur. Given that it's going to happen, I would like to see it happen when other elections are already taking place, which are during the municipal races in February and in April. That would save a heck of a lot of money, but I don't think that money, at least on the part of the advocates of the recall elections, really was the prime concern.
And Daryl Mayfield, your point of view on the fact that the people who are circulating those petitions say they've now got 500,000 signatures.
Well, I think that in looking at this particular issue, you have to understand the ideology behind Governor Walker, what he supports, and the ideology that he purports. I think that those that are involved in the recall of the governor are practicing democracy. This is what democracy looks like. And I think that the people's money being used in the fashion that the people want it to be used, which is that they, so that they can have good government, is not a waste of money. that is the people's right.
I want to go right to the phones. We've already got callers lined up, and I imagine we'll be getting callers throughout the program. So I'm going to try to get to some of the phone calls right now, which is a little bit of a break in the format. But let's go to Teresa and Stevens Point, who has been waiting patiently. Teresa, you're on Route 51 with Kevin Hermaning and Daryl Mayfield.
Hi, thank you. My comment is actually related to the voter ID law. I don't think enough people are aware of the fact that the voter ID law was introduced here in 13 other states this year, courtesy of an organization called ALEC, A-L-E-C, the American Legislative Executive Council, an organization funded by Koch Brothers and other big corporations. This is the same organization that gave Walker the provisions of the budget repair bill, and what they do is they basically craft model legislation and have it introduced into many states via their legislative members. The Fitzgeralds are actually members of this group. If you visit ALEC's website and do just a little bit of research on them, you'll find that they make no effort to hide whatsoever their desire to disenfranchise certain sectors of our population. It's very clear they want to turn us back to the days of only the wealthy landowners being able to vote. And I find it curious that only Republican-controlled states have passed this legislation. If we really had a widespread fraud issue, which facts show we do not, it would be a nonpartisan issue. You can't claim that Democrats don't care about voting integrity. The bottom line is the democratic process is being subverted by having big corporations write our laws. And finally, if we really care about voting integrity, we should be more worried about what happens to the votes after they're cast. We need to fix inconsistency problems so we don't have a repeat of what happened in Waukesha County this past spring. The results of elections should really be in the hands of those who vote, not those who count the ballot. Thank you for taking my comment.
And Teresa, thanks so much for the phone call. Kevin Hermaning, you Republicans want to return us basically to a landed aristocracy with only property owners having the right to vote.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't heard any of that that debate, of course, in the state capitol earlier this year when the law was being passed. But I would submit that the concerns that have been raised about voter fraud, the concerns that have been raised about voter disenfranchisement have been somewhat exaggerated, certainly on the side that that there are going to be millions of people across the United States disenfranchised from being able to cast a legal ballot on Election Day next year. It doesn't hold up. The Brennan study has been picked apart many times, the New York University Brennan study, which claims that up to 6 million Americans could be disenfranchised. 5 million of those people that they're claiming could be disenfranchised have many other alternatives. There are states which have passed voter ID laws that have had Democrat state legislatures. Certainly you look at states like Georgia, where even the Holder Justice Department backed down at the first threat of a lawsuit by the state of Georgia in the voter ID law because the Holder Justice Department did not want to allow Georgia to actually move forward in implementing it. Holder backed down on day number one and said, "We guess there really isn't a concern that we see happening in Georgia." The same thing would happen in Wisconsin.
What about Teresa's comment that this is all basically a national strategy pushed by this American Legislative Exchange Council, funded by Charles and David Koch, and the push is to make sure that people who vote Democratic are going to have a harder time getting to the polls?
Well, the last that I looked at the membership of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, they had more than 2,000 members across the United States. They are legislators. Whether or not the Koch brothers are funders of it or not, there are many nonprofit, nonpartisan organizations. This one happens to be a Federalist supporting conservative organization, a nonprofit organization that seeks to assist conservative legislators in understanding concerns about public policy, whether it's in the area of education reform, environmental reform, certainly welfare reform in the 1990s and through the 2000s. President Clinton himself signed legislation to reform welfare as we knew it. These were initiatives generated at the state level by conservative legislators, if you think about it, right here in Wisconsin back in the 90s.
She says members of this group are open about their desire to suppress votes.
Yeah,
that's what the caller said.
Right. Well, she's reading from a list of talking points that have no validity and haven't been found to have any sense of reality.
Daryl Mayfield?
Well, I think she's reading from exactly what Paul Weyrich, the chairman of founder of ALEC, said, that our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as voting populace goes down. So what we're looking at is, and I don't say that it's going to be a landed gentry that we're going to return to. However, we are looking at returning to oligarchies in some states and plutocracies nationally. It's an ideology. The question becomes, for whom is the republic established for? And in many instances, the answer to that question, we've seen change throughout America's history. Let's take, for example, after the Revolutionary War, the new American nation has debt. James Madison comes up with a plan that he's going to tax alcohol. However, they decide that they're going to tax alcohol but not wine. Why is that? Well, it's because the alcohol or the whiskey that they're going to tax is being consumed by those on the frontier. Those on the frontier are not landed. They do not vote. So this is part and parcel of American history, and we've seen this page and this playbook time and time again.
Let's
Glenn, before we go on, every state in the United States has state chairman or state chairwoman of ALEC. And in Wisconsin, we have two very well-respected state representatives who are the state chairman representatives on the Board of Representatives for ALEC. That includes Representative Scott Suter and Representative Robin Voss. Both of these guys have a pretty good standing in the state legislature. Yes, they support conservative causes. Yes, they voted for the governor's initiatives. Yes, they supported the voter ID law. And yes, they get around and represent their communities very, very well. This is really all about sour grapes and who won and who lost the election. And typically what we see in the United States of America over the last 15 to 20 years, when one side, and it's typically the losing side on the liberal agenda pushing group of Americans, loses an election, they seek to use the recall process or they seek to use the courts to right or undo a perceived wrong, which was really a loss in an election.
How do you respond to what Daryl said about Paul Weyrich, who has said that, who's been quoted in the past as saying that it's better for conservatives if not everybody votes, if only a few people vote, because the wider the turnout, the more it tends to go against conservative causes, because the higher the voter turnout, the more liberals get elected. And if that's the case, then wouldn't it make sense that you folks would want to suppress voter turnout?
So do you think that if we concentrate our efforts and our discussion right now in this conversation point you're trying to make in central Wisconsin, are you suggesting that it would have been better for, let's say, Donna Sedell, if no conservatives had turned out to vote at all, because then she would have won in a landslide against Chuck Eno?
I'm not saying that at all.
You're just asking the question,
I'm just asking the question.
Right, I know. You're not making a point.
And if there is an underlying point, the point is this. Is it better to have a big voter turnout or a restricted voter turnout? Would you like to see a 100% voter turnout, or would you like to see a smaller percentage than that, and if so, why?
I would like to see every American exercise their constitutional right to turn out and vote, including the woman from Brokaw, who I am certain there will be an effort made to try to get this village trustee a voter ID prior to the next election opportunity.
Well, you've kind of set us up for this, so we're going to play the story of Ruth L. Frank.
And I think we should.
And this is an 84-year-old trustee. She's voted in every election since 1948, and she is now joining an American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit against the state of Wisconsin.
Ruth L. Frank has lived in the same neighborhood in the village of Brokaw for 84 years.
The 21st of August of 1927, born in a house across the road.
She was delivered at home, and there were complications. Frank ended up partially paralyzed, but she persevered and took pride in being a citizen. She's voted in every election since her first one.
It was in 1948, so that's a long time ago.
But Frank thinks she may miss the next election because she doesn't have a driver's license and she never got the birth certificate she needs for a state-approved voter ID.
My birth is registered in Madison, but my father's last name is spelled wrong and my mother's first name is spelled wrong.
It costs $20 for a birth certificate, but Frank has been told to get the information corrected, it could cost $200. She says she shouldn't have to spend a dime.
I'm not going to put out any money in order to vote. I think it was even guaranteed in the Constitution, the right to vote.
In 1996, Ruthelle Frank was elected to the Brokaw Village Board. But when she runs for re-election this spring, she worries that she won't even be able to vote for herself.
It would hurt. You know, I can't vote for myself. Well, how can I help anybody else? This whole situation, it just hurts.
Her husband, 85-year-old Henry Frank, says it hurts him, too.
To see what she's got to go through, and after all the years that she voted, I think it's rotten. I think it's terrible. I don't think it's fair. She's not probably the only one out there that's in the same kind of shape.
She's not the only one, according to John Sherman, an attorney with the American Civil Liberty Union's Voting Rights Project.
That is what the effect of this misguided law is. You basically need four forms of documentation for an original driver's license or state ID card at the Wisconsin DMV. That's difficult for a lot of people.
Sherman called Ruthelle Frank from his office in Georgia.
We were interested in her case. We've been actively exploring and investigating all of these photo ID laws across the nation.
Sherman would not say if the ACLU is considering legal action against Wisconsin's voter ID law. But Republican State Senator Pam Galloway says the new law is needed to protect her constituents, including Ruthelle Frank.
To make sure that you really are who you say you are. So it actually protects people like Ruth, when she does go to vote, that her vote will count, that she isn't being disenfranchised by somebody voting fraudulently.
Senator Galloway says she's surprised that people like Ruthelle Frank don't have the documentation for the IDs.
You know, it's surprising to me that there are people out there that don't have a copy of their birth certificate. When you consider that you really need a photo ID for so many different things, so I'm very frustrated for her.
But Frank says she was frustrated when she brought four forms of identification to the DMV, waited in line, and was turned away.
They wouldn't even look at my other papers. I had everything. I had my Social Security card. I had my marriage license. I had proof where I lived, and I had all the other requirements. The only thing I didn't have was a birth certificate.
According to Wisconsin's Government Accountability Board, Frank could vote absentee if she claimed she was indefinitely confined to her home. She said that would be a lie.
That's not truthful. I'm not confined to this house. I might not be able to travel around like a lot of other people do, but I get around and I can walk.
And Ruthelle Frank says she shouldn't have to lie or spend any money in order to exercise her right to vote. In Brokaw, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
It's a story of Ruthelle Frank, who is now joining the American Civil Liberties Union and suing the state of Wisconsin. And Kevin Hermaning, you said you think that there will be an effort to get her a legal voter ID.
I do. And one of your guests or one of the people you interviewed said that there are four documents required to get a Wisconsin driver's license. That is actually patently false. There are not four documents that are necessary to get a Wisconsin driver's license. Anybody who logs onto the DMV website for the state of Wisconsin would see that you need a social security number and you need your birth certificate. And if you don't, and of course, unless you're not a citizen, if you were not born in the United States, then you might need another document. What's interesting is that thankfully, 20 years before this woman was born, women were given the right to vote in the United States. It was a shame they didn't have the right to vote before that. Suffrage began in the 1820s, 1830s, women's suffrage in the U.S., and there have constantly been efforts to expand opportunities for Americans to exercise their free right of choosing their elected leaders.
Let's let Daryl Mayfield weigh in on this very quickly. Daryl?
Well, I think the accusations of voter fraud don't ring true. In Wisconsin in 2004, the election was hotly contested. And this comes from the same study, the Brennan Center study that Kevin originally alluded to earlier in the program. Anyway, in looking into voter fraud in the 2004 election, especially in Milwaukee, they found that there was a rate of 0.0025% within Milwaukee and 0.0002% within the state as a whole. None of the allegations or problems could have been solved by requiring a photo ID at the polls. Many of the problems that we see, basically, if you look at another survey done in 2004, 43% of New Jersey's county election officials did not follow state law in restoring citizens' right to vote. That's county election officers, not the voting public. In New York, a much-publicized 2003 survey found that more than half of the local election officials did not follow state law. Again, that is not voter fraud. Now, what is voter fraud? Let's define the problem. Voter fraud is me going to vote and saying that I'm Glenn Moberg. That's voter fraud. Voter fraud is not me, Daryl Mayfield, going to vote saying I'm Daryl Mayfield. So what does the law get to? There are plenty of things that I can bring to prove it. There are plenty of things. What we see is, again, Royal Massett, the former political director for the Republican Party of Texas, when asked in a 2007 Houston Chronicle article, said, among Republicans, it is an article of religious faith that voter fraud is causing us to lose elections.
I'm going to have to hold that thought because I'm way overdue for a break. We'll be back with more. Kevin Hermaning, Daryl Mayfield, voter ID, the recall of Governor Walker, and your phone calls after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we are discussing the voter ID law, which is the subject of two lawsuits filed, one by the ACLU, one by the League of Women Voters, and the recall effort against Governor Walker. We've got two guests, small businessmen, who are on opposite sides of the issue. Kevin Hermaning, who's a financial advisor in the Wausau area, and also Daryl Mayfield, who is the owner of a management consultant group in Mosinee. We want to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And gentlemen, we are just about out of time for this half hour, which has gone very quickly. Kevin, you've got 10 seconds to respond to what Daryl said. Voter fraud isn't a problem.
Well, I would submit that if people are opposed to the idea that they shouldn't be required to show a voter ID at the polling place to cast their constitutional right in a free and fair and open election, then they ought to be rising up and saying you shouldn't have to show an ID to buy alcohol, cigarettes, a fishing license, or even college textbooks.
We'll be
it's
back
ridiculous.
With more after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we are looking at two lawsuits filed over Wisconsin's voter ID law. One filed by the American Civil Liberties Union in federal court, one filed by the League of Women Voters in state court. And we've got two guests debating this and also talking about the recall effort of Governor Walker on a day when it has been announced that more than 500,000 signatures have been collected. Kevin Hermaning, who has run as a Republican for Congress and for the state Senate, and also Daryl Mayfield, an independent businessman who considers himself an independent in terms of voting, but also favors the recall of the governor and is opposed to the voter ID law. We've had a number of callers who have been on the line waiting patiently. We're going to go right to them. Let's go to Oliver in Weston. Oliver, you're on Route 51.
Good evening or good afternoon, Glenn. My question's one for each of your guests. Daryl, if I understood what you said correctly, voter fraud would be someone saying that they were Daryl Mayfield who wasn't and voting. Did I understand that correctly?
Correct.
What would you say to an illustration that says that voter fraud is someone who is voting who should not be eligible to vote? Is that also voter fraud in your by your definition?
Voter fraud certainly is. If I am attempting to vote and I am someone else, I'm lying. Also, Oliver, I would agree with you that if you are ineligible to vote and you attempt to vote, then, of course, that's voter fraud.
All right. If we take a look, that one of the contentions behind voter ID is to eliminate those people, whether you would call them undocumented workers, illegal aliens, who are voting now, who should not have the privilege to vote, I would say that that would be a reason for voter ID. And the second question I'd like to ask you then, Darrell, as you said at the outset.
Well, that's interesting. Let's take what you just said and let's look at Wisconsin again in 2004. 376 people with allegedly disenfranchising convictions were said to have voted. As I mentioned earlier, from the study done in New Jersey, the study done in New York, basically those individuals should have been caught had they voted by the election officials. The election officers were not knowledgeable about who could vote and who could not. Go ahead.
But that's not a fault of the law.
Issue and quickly, because I know Glenn wants to get to other callers, set aside that point because it's arguable either way. We know we have a large number of undocumented workers in this state, and they're able to vote with fraudulent IDs. As it stands right now, we make it more difficult. We have the possibility of screening those people out. But I'd like to go to the other point you made at the outset, that this is democracy. We are not a democracy, Darrell. We are a representative republic, and I think that's part of the problem. We heard it said from both sides of the aisle down in Madison when these issues relative to collective bargaining were addressed. We are a republic, and a republic and a representative republic is dealt with the rule of law. And so, Kevin, I'd like to ask you the question, why is it that we can't have recall handled just like the election process, where people have to go at a specific time, and if they want to be verified in the same way that they did to vote, to say we want to see the governor recall?
All right, Oliver, just let's let Kevin answer that very quickly, and then I need Darrell to answer the republic versus democracy statement that you made. Kevin, very quickly.
Well, first of all, the recall process has only been a part of the Wisconsin Constitution for about 80 years. It was not part of the Constitution when our state was founded in 1848. It wasn't added until the late 1920s. And
during the Progressive Era.
During the Progressive Era. But the rationale and the debate, and I've read both the law, I've read as I prepared for this broadcast, some of the rationale that was bandied about when the Constitution was amended. And I certainly have read the analysis that has been done since then over the last couple of months. It was meant to deal with malfeasance. It was not meant to deal specifically.
Why isn't that language in the Constitution if that's it was meant for? Listen, it doesn't say that malfeasance. It just says
it
you can
not,
have a recall.
I completely agree with you because the crafters of the amendment to the Wisconsin Constitution trust the public. I trust the public too, and I trust the public is going to. Actually, I trust that the public is going to punish the recall effort. I really do.
Let's go to Darrell Mayfield and have you respond to Oliver's statement.
Yeah, Oliver's exactly correct. And what he's alluding to is the follow-up to the question that he asked Kevin. In a true democracy, yes, we would go to the polls almost every day. In a representative republic, we have representatives basically. But we do have laws. We do have something that says if the people are unhappy – here is a process for regress, and that is what is being used in the recall.
And, Oliver, I've got one question for you. You called voting a privilege. Do you believe it's a privilege or a right?
I choose to use that word privilege for this reason, Glenn, and it's a good question. It is a right for those who are here legally. It's a privilege to the extent that we get to exercise it in a legal way. People have taken the word right, Glenn, and they have extended it far beyond its constitutional roots in the Bill of Rights or go all the way back to the Magna Carta in 1215. I consider it a privilege because of the fact that the term right has been so badly mangled and misused that I don't think it really means what it meant
if,
when the Constitution of this state
if voting,
or the
if,
U.S. Constitution.
Oliver, if voting isn't a right, what is a right? Voting has to be the most fundamental right of citizenship in this or any country. And it's the basis of our foreign policy.
Okay, Glenn, may I? Quickly. If you take a look at the word right, if you don't like my word privilege, I consider it a responsibility, and I tie privilege and responsibility to a right. And I don't want to get into semantics with you. You're right. It is fundamental, but the word right has been so badly misused that I try not to incorrectly use it myself.
All right. Oliver, thanks so much for the phone call. I want to move on to Bob in Lac du Flambeau, who has also been waiting patiently. Bob, you're on Route 51.
Thank you. I would have to agree with Mr. Mayfield on the issue of voter fraud. I believe that we have no realistic voter fraud problem in Wisconsin. By the way, I'm also a small business operator in Vilas County. The whole issue of voter fraud, really, the crux of the matter is that fraud has to be knowing. And if someone goes to the polling place intending to vote and is not eligible to vote for reasons that they're not aware of at the time, that's not voter fraud. That's simply an error. We have no issue of illegal alien voting in this state that I've heard of. And, in fact, the only case we've had recently up here in our area was a Republican who voted twice knowingly in an election and ended up with a felony conviction for it. Now, I live on the Lac du Flambeau Ojibwe Reservation, and voter ID here tends to disenfranchise many Native American citizens. And that's because many of them have no driver's license and no tribal ID. Now, a person can be 100% Native American and still not qualify for a tribal ID because they don't have the requisite blood quantum to belong to any one particular tribe. Those persons are expected to travel about 40 miles to a motor vehicles office up here and to get an ID for voting. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what we're doing is we're taking a lot of tribal members off the voting rolls.
Bob, thank you so much for the phone call. And before we have Kevin and Daryl respond, I want to run through some other statistics from the Employment and Training Institute of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And either of you can challenge these if you wish. But their research report on the driver's license status of voting age people in Wisconsin. Statewide, 59% of Hispanic females don't have driver's licenses, 55% of African American males, 49% of African American females, 46% of Hispanic males, only 17% of white males and females are without driver's licenses. Young adults ages 18 to 24, 78% of African American males in that age group, 66% of African American females lacking driver's licenses. 93% of the college students at Marquette University, UW-Madison, and UW-Milwaukee don't have valid driver's licenses for those residences. Even though they live there, college towns like Eau Claire and Stevens Point, 82% of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds don't have driver's licenses for those residences. And finally, more than 177,000 residents aged 65 or older don't have a driver's license or a photo ID. These are the statistics, in addition to what Bob was just saying, that people use when they say that this is going to disenfranchise people. It's going to keep them from showing up at the polls, and there are a lot of them.
Again, as Oliver said in one of his final statements, he threw out the boogaboo of illegal aliens voting. And that is something that is always thrown up, that these individuals are here illegally. Somehow they're going to vote in the process. Okay, so let's say in 2004 that we had a number of illegal immigrants or illegal aliens here in Wisconsin. Well, where's the voter fraud? Where are the numbers for that? I'm looking at numbers, the same study that Mr. Hermaning was looking at, and I see nothing about illegal aliens voting in Wisconsin elections. In America's times of economic stress, in its times of having social upheaval, there has always been this strand that's run through American history to try and blame it on the immigrant. We had the immigration of Chinese workers to build the railroads. What happened after they were done? They were deported. We have Mexicans coming in during World War II. What happens after men came back and they were deported. So there's a strand that we want the immigrant, but yet we don't want the immigrant. And when it's time to leave, we have to find an issue that we can feel good about that we will then deport them. And it's interesting. The current administration in Washington has deported 440,000, and it's not enough.
But we're getting off topic here. Kevin, I'd like you to address the concerns that Bob made of the Native Americans in Lac du Flambeau being disenfranchised, and those statistics I just read for you of how many people in this state don't have driver's licenses with photo IDs, and conceivably before they can vote, they're all going to have to wait in line at a DMV office. Isn't that going to keep some of them from voting?
3 points. First of all, with regard to the Native Americans on Lac du Flambeau and the Ojibwa tribe members being unable to travel 40 miles to go to a place where they need to get a voter ID, I find that ridiculous. I would submit that most of those young men and women or older men and women probably, when they were in high school, traveled a heck of a lot further than 40 miles to go and attend a football game while in high school from their football team. And the idea that you can't travel or get a ride 40 miles to be able to get something that is so important to people, and that is an ID so they can cast a very important ballot, I find to be, it's a red herring in my view. With regard to the college students at Marquette or Madison or Oshkosh where I attended or any of the other public or private universities in the state, the students who are attending there and their voter ID, I'm sorry, their driver's license doesn't match the address in which they're currently residing while they're a student, they have a choice. They can either change their legal address to the place where they're then living, Madison, Milwaukee, or Oshkosh, wherever they're going to school, or they vote absentee if they happen to not be back in their hometown, which is their legal residence. Your legal residence for financial aid, your legal residence for your parents to be able to claim you as a dependent. For crying out loud, let's be consistent in the application of the law.
How many college students is this going to keep from voting in Madison, in Stevens Point, in Eau Claire?
It will stop any student from voting in a place where they shouldn't be voting if they're not willing to do the hard work. Listen, if they're smart enough to get into the public or private university, they're smart enough to be able to learn how and where to vote.
That's...
I have a child in college in Indiana and a child in college in Virginia. Two kids living out of state going to college right now as we're speaking. They're going to be coming home soon for the holidays. My younger daughter asked me about voting. She just turned 18 in November. I said, well, honey, of course, you're going to vote in Mosinee. And she said, but I'm not going to be home on election day. I said, no, there's a process by which you will be able to vote. It's called absentee voting. Now, I wish she had learned that in civics class in the public schools in Mosinee, but apparently she either wasn't taught it or it didn't stick.
Daryl Mayfield?
What he lays out as alternatives or choices aren't choices at all, and we've seen this before. African Americans were prior to the Civil Rights, prior to the 1964 Voting Rights Act. If you didn't have $15 or $30 to pay the poll tax, you did not vote.
We're not talking about
you
then.
Still,
we're talking about
but you,
now,
Daryl. But you still had a choice, and the choice was get a ride or basically move. So again, it's the same ideology, I think, that what we're looking at from then to now. We're not winning elections. Let's suppress the vote. What part of that can't people understand?
Wait a second. I think it's actually kind of interesting because this law was passed after the people who are now in office won the election. So your argument is actually inaccurate. You have a child who went to college out of the city in which you presently reside, which is Mosinee. Where did your child
vote? Making, I was
back
making
in Mosinee?
A comment that you made about Native Americans. You've never lived on a reservation.
That's true. I haven't.
Thank you. Haven't. You haven't. So how do you know that they can catch 40 miles, a ride for 40, or they
you know
travel
what?
That far for football?
My
that's
comment
making
was,
an assumption.
I said probably.
That's making an assumption. It's still making an assumption
yes,
that you
is.
Don't know. But again, as I said earlier, if you frame the problem any way you would like to frame it, then of course you can come up with a solution.
Let me repeat these statistics. 49% of African American females, 55% of African American males. For young adults age 18 to 24, 78% of African American males and 66% of African American females lack driver's licenses. Daryl, you're an African American. Do these statistics bother you?
I'm an American of African descent.
We're not.
That's what I am. On this issue, in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, 55% of all Americans of African descent males, 49% of Americans of African descent females do not have state-issued ID cards, nor do 46% of Mexican men, 59% of Mexican women. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about making sure that some folks aren't involved in the process.
I totally disagree with that. The fact
of
the matter is
do.
That every why because I'm not
no
because
you frame no because you frame the you no. frame the problem so that it will fit your solution. I'm simply throwing that the statistics out.
How many Americans
0.0025?
How many Americans of African descent, to use your terminology, mm-hmm. what's the percentage that vote Democratic?
Well, according to the national polls, about 97%.
So you're disenfranchising large numbers of this group.
Why?
That
where,
vote 90.
Why is your premise that they're going to be unable to get a voter ID?
You're making them go through the hoops. You're making them go through the process. Whereas before, they could just show up for the polls. You're making it more difficult for them to vote.
Where's the fraud? Show me the fraud.
What is that? Is that the point?
That's a problem we're trying to solve.
Is there a fraud trying to get on an airplane?
If that is not the problem we're trying to solve, then let's exactly and explicitly say what the real problem is. And we've got data that says it doesn't solve the problem the way that we've defined it, that it's voter fraud.
The solution is to prove who you are when you go to vote and to prove that you are the right person whose photo is on the identification card, that you reside at the location in which you do live, and that is really at the crux of what the debate is. A few years ago, I was in Costa Rica, Honduras, Nicaragua, and El Salvador, and I visited with people in Honduras who, for the first time in 60 years, walked for 6 days to get to a polling place. It was the first free and fair and open and democratic election as they were trying to put in place a representative democracy, a representative republic in their country. They walked for 6 days through the jungles and mountains of Honduras in hot, sweaty conditions in a terrible climate, comparatively speaking, to what I'm comfortable in. And these folks said they would do it all over again just so that they could vote. We have people who won't travel 40 miles or whine about it. We have people who won't cast an absentee ballot. We have people who won't go to their local church or their local school right across the street to be able to cast a vote. But they'll show up for a sporting event. They'll show up for a concert. But they won't do the hard things that are necessary to exercise. I agree with you, Glenn. It is a right, but it's a right that can be lost. All right. Things like driving, things like drinking because you're of a certain age, those are privileges in the United States. But the right to vote is fundamental as an American citizen. And I don't particularly like the idea that my vote might be disenfranchised by even one person, 0.00002% of our population who might cheat. And if people are upset about this, it's because they must feel that the cheaters have had the upper hand. And some of us on the other side are opposed to that.
Kevin Hermaning and Daryl Mayfield, we've got to take a quick break. Once again, we're way over for this break. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I want to take one last phone call. We have Vic in Amherst Junction, who's been waiting patiently, and we are down to our last few minutes of this program. Vic, you're on Route 51.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to address a previous caller, and it seems like everyone's on the same page regarding whether voting is a right or a privilege, and I appreciate Kevin agreeing with that now. And then back at Kevin, what I want to say is, If this is not a disenfranchisement toward the voters of Wisconsin, which people, I think, clearly, I have friends who are Republican, I have friends who are Democrat, they say, right, you know, they look at this process and everyone's scratching their head wondering, why here in Wisconsin? Why here in Wisconsin? We have just some of the best voting records that I just don't see the issue. I don't think anyone sees the problem, and no one ever has.
Vic, we're going to have to hold it there because,
Vic,
we are plumb out of time. Thanks for your comments, and I'm going to let Daryl go first, and then, Kevin, you get the last word.
Again, as I said earlier, I think it depends on how you define the problem. I think behind the recall effort as well as the voter ID is based in a particular ideology of who is, for whom does the republic serve? And I think that there are forces that would like to see it serve the entrepreneurs or the capitalists as opposed to those who actually make up the republic, the people.
Kevin Hermaning?
Yeah, I just think that what we're really trying to do is to put in place rules that, to most people, I believe, make sense, common sense. Prove who you are, just like when you're boarding a plane, buying college textbooks, or a fishing license. Prove who you are. Our country spent billions of dollars, and many men died in Iraq, and we put in place a process where people had to dunk their fingertip in a purple jar of ink to prove that they only voted one time. That's the solution here.
What if we made voting mandatory like they do in Australia? Everybody votes, just like everybody pays taxes.
Wouldn't that
eliminate fraud?
Well, actually, we already know that 47% of the American people don't pay any income taxes
They have to file the paperwork.
Yeah, well, most of them don't, actually, because you don't have to under your certain level. But I think that forcing people to vote would be a bad idea, too.
We want to thank today's guest, financial advisor Kevin Hermaning, Daryl Mayfield, the owner of Bradley Mesh Group, two small businessmen on opposite sides of the new voter ID law and the effort to recall the governor. They're shaking hands, folks. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Bennis. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, a special holiday treat, an encore performance of our live concert last August with one of the nation's premier bluegrass bands, Art Stevenson and High Water, a concert at the Center for Civic Engagement Theater that concluded our summer music series. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.